Godspeed with Carol Hollenbeck, Sundays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom in an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Carol Hollenbeck. The Reverend Janet I. Decker is an ordained minister with the Universal Life Church in Modesto, California, and is a dean of metaphysics at the International Metaphysical University. She is also a certified clinical hypnotherapist and a certified hypnoanesthesia therapist, a graduate of the Institute of Ethical and Clinical Hypnosis in Washington, D.C. She is creator and publisher of 10 hypnosis, self-help, and spiritual development resources. A qualified forensic hypnotist, Reverend Decker has worked with various law enforcement agencies as well as persons in the private sector to help witnesses and victims of crime or accidents to recover repressed or forgotten information. She is a member of the National Guild of Hypnotists, the American Association of Behavioral Therapists, and the United Metaphysical Churches. Reverend Decker, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Carol, and thank you for having me.
Now, Reverend, you have such a combination of practical and intuitive skills. I wonder if we might begin actually with the school at which you are a dean, IMU, which offers a master's degree in metaphysics with a major in consciousness studies, holistic health, intuitive arts, paranormal studies, shamanic studies, and ufology. It's a fascinating realm of education, and can you share some about the school and some of its history?
Oh, I'd love to. Basically, the idea for IMU started in 2001. IMU's founder and president, Deborah Lindsay, was combing the globe looking for some kind of legitimate, high-quality metaphysical education. And metaphysical subjects and subjects on consciousness was nowhere to be found in mainstream academia. The internet was still new then, and online schools were largely non-existent. The best thing that could be found at the time were distance education programs. Now, these schools were basically mail-order schools, and the schools were cutting-edge at the time. They offered a wonderful avenue for learning, but the mail order format had an abbreviated learning style and left a lot to be desired. So the need for a school that met mainstream credentials with top quality instructors that actually included student-teacher interaction and student-student interaction was still obvious. There was a need for it. And so the idea or the seeds for IMU began to simmer underneath the surface there. And then in 2003, Deborah Lindsay and a few others of like mind began discussing the possibilities of a real brick-and-mortar school for metaphysics. Mm-hmm. But the details for creating such a school was really overwhelming, you know, funding, accreditation, curriculum development, and so on. And so the enthusiasm for getting such a school up and running waned very quickly. And a few years later, Deborah met Sandy Vickers. Now, Sandy had come to participate in one of Deb's many metaphysical classes. And after the class, she and Deborah had a conversation. And in that conversation, Sandy said these now famous words, "I can put this class online for you." And that conversation led to a meeting with Sandy and her brother, Steve Russell.
Reverend Decker?
Yes.
Before you proceed, I'm wondering if there's a way you could speak up or perhaps closer to your microphone.
Okay. Is this any better?
That is a lot better.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So the meeting occurred between Sandy and her brother, Steve Russell,
and Deborah Lindsay. And as it turned out, Steve was an expert in creating online colleges and at getting schools accredited. So this dream began to take flight. And within a few short weeks, there was a top-notch team assembled. They were, by all accounts, spectacular. Everyone just seemed to know exactly what they were supposed to do. It was a very exciting time. And so for the next 7 months, we all worked tirelessly, and with no money, by the way, to create the school of our dreams. And this dream team, as we called ourselves, created a school that was meant to change the world. On November the 4th in 2009, IMU officially opened its doors to students. Now, we're still moving towards getting accredited, but it's a process and it takes time. And as we know, Rome was not built in a day.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
I appreciate you saying building the school of your dreams. And where is it located?
Well, it's an online school, so it's out there in the ethers. But the office is in Vienna, West Virginia.
Very good. And you are a dean of metaphysics there.
I am.
Now, currently, I read you're teaching a class on the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we recognize the Lord's Prayer has come emerging from the Christian tradition. What role do world religions play in such a curriculum as that of IMU?
Well, religion plays a small role in the actual curriculum at IMU, but I think a necessary one. I mean, after all, it's played a huge role in cultures all over the world, and so, in my opinion, should not be excluded from an education in conscious awareness or expansion of consciousness. The comparative religions course is required in the consciousness studies program only. The reason it's required there is because we feel there are many truths that are contained within the many doctrines of various religions. Truth
yeah.
that is pondered can and will open doorways for expanded consciousness awareness. My own class, the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic, is just one class inside the ordination program, by the way.
Yes, and it's interesting to me how most every organized religion, as we tend to refer to them, also has a rather rich mystic tradition.
Absolutely.
And as we explore on the program here with scholars and speakers from around the world, we always find a common language when we get into the mystical realm and common symbols and goals. And for example, in your school, consciousness, as might be explored in mystical traditions as well, consciousness through education. Can you share your thoughts on consciousness? How would you define it? What is it for you?
Well, this is very interesting. Often in giving lectures, I will ask my audience to point to their brain. And so they, of course, point to their head. Well, then I'll ask them to point to their minds, and they don't know what to do. Some will point again to their heads. Others will point to their heads again and then change their minds, and they smile and look at each other, and they don't know where to point, and rightly so. Because basically, mind and consciousness to me are the same thing, and it's not confined to just the human brain. It's in every cell of the body. It's in every muscle, every tissue, every fiber. Mind and consciousness is in everything that exists on this planet and in the universe, in my opinion. And it is the invisible energy, vibration, or frequency that connects us to each other and to the earth, to the natural world, and to all the everything, sacred unity. You know, I remember one of my spiritual teachers used to say, God, 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 there is naught but God. What he was really saying is there is naught but consciousness. Now, perhaps the best way to explain consciousness, Carol, is through an analogy. Just like a radio or TVs or cell phones, they must pick up on an invisible frequency in order to operate. Well, so do we. Now, we're all like big walking antennas that are tapped into a high vibrational frequency. We just don't know it. And because we don't know it, we see ourselves as separate beings when in fact we're all one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to give this example to help explain. You know, just as all plant life springs from one earth, so do all people spring from one universe. This inability to feel and know our connection, our conscious connection to all things, has brought us to a really ugly place on the planet. And the other thing we need to do, I think, is stop thinking that our physical bodies are who we are. All things physical are just manifestations of frequency that has been flowed down. Our spirit is our true self. And you ask me, how do we connect to it? Well, we're already connected. It is not something you have to do. It is more about the other parts of your question, Carol, as to how we experience it or practice the connection. I suggest meditation, chanting, guided visualization, and hypnosis are the best ways.
Mm.
And having this, something with me, having said this, you know, I'm going to now ask you, Carol, I can't talk here today, I'm having a tongue thing going on. As a hypnotherapist, that is not good, by the way.
Mm.
I'd like you to do something with me.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Interactive.
And
go ahead.
This is something that listeners can do as well, as long as they're not driving.
You hear that, listeners?
Yep, that's not a good thing. Can't be driving and do this. So in a moment, I'm going to ask you, not yet though, in a moment, I'm going to ask you to take a deep breath and fill your diaphragm and lungs with air. And when I tell you to take the deep breath into your diaphragm and lungs, you're going to hold it for a slow mental count of five, and then you're going to exhale. Now here's the important part. When you exhale, after you have emptied your lungs and diaphragm, don't breathe in again for just a moment or two. In other words, you want to rest in that space of no breath for just a moment. Now, in order to have an experience of what it feels like to be connected to the I Am consciousness, you must pay attention while you're doing this. Notice every step. Notice as you breathe in. Notice as you hold that breath. Notice as you breathe out. And particularly, notice the feelings in your body and in your brain while you're in the space of no breath. And the other part of this is when you breathe out, let your jaw drop, let your teeth drift apart, let everything just sort of relax.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Ready.
Okay. Ready.
Here we go. Take a deep breath in, filling diaphragm first and then lungs with air. And hold it for a slow mental count of five. Exhale when you're ready. As you exhale, let your jaw drop. Let your teeth drift apart. Empty your lungs and diaphragm and rest in that space of no breath. And now that we've done this once, and you know the sequence, I'd like you to do it again, paying attention to your body and what you feel through the process. So take a deep breath in, filling your diaphragm and lungs with air.
Okay.
Hold it for a slow mental count of five. Exhale when you're ready. As you exhale, let your jaw drop and your teeth drift apart. Empty your lungs and diaphragm and rest in the space of no breath. Now you should be able to feel things you have not felt before. And I describe it sort of a sense of expansion, perhaps, that you're larger somehow, or that you feel a vibratory sense of tingling throughout your body when you do this.
Yes.
Did
yes,
you?
And I enjoyed the phrase no breath.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the words stay empty came to my mind, which perhaps some people, I don't know, might feel uncomfortable with the thought of no breath.
Right, right.
But from where we are here, broadcasting, well, we were through New York, but we're actually our studio's in Midcoast, Maine. And I looked out the window at that moment, and everything was still outside.
Everything.
As well, on this sort of grayish fall day, mm-hmm. with muted colors of gold and rust, and you know, earthy green.
Right.
And I felt still there, and felt the stillness outside when we did that. Now, so thank you.
Well, you're welcome. It's just a small demonstration or exercise. I think that every person can practice daily and experience their connection with the energetic field we call consciousness or sacred unity. You know, with practice,
yes.
you can learn to walk through your day fully aware of this connection to everything. And when you when you're connected, you can ask any question and instantly receive the correct answer. And this is so fabulous because everything, known or unknown, exists there in that space.
So now, this is very interesting because before we did the exercise, you had said that about consciousness that we're connected to something much larger, but, quote, we don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me, our bodies tend to define us in our culture. And that's, of course, related to, like, visible light. You know, we don't see most of what's around us in our world at all. And further out there, the space sciences are catching up that, you know, we don't see. We don't have any, we can't visibly see about 99% of the, you know, we only see about 10% of what exists in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that perhaps that is the bulk of existence is what we can't see. That's the bulk of matter that we can't define. And they're starting to call it dark matter, or dark energy. You mentioned energy earlier. So in order to connect with this that is so big and expansive and all around us and within us, you find hypnosis a powerful tool?
I do.
Can we explore your interest in hypnosis and how you were first drawn to this field?
Well, yes, we can. It's an interesting story, I think. Well, when I first got out of high school, I thought I would go to school and become a psychologist. So I went to school for 2 years and decided this was boring. And basically, according to studies, it was a very slow and often ineffective way of treating people.
Mm.
So I quit, and I became a veterinary technician, which I loved. And I did that for some time. And then about 30 years ago, I was going through a very difficult time, difficult in just about every way imaginable. I think we all go through those periods in our life at least once. And I was raised Lutheran, and I had gone to the same church all of my life, but I was not finding solace there, nor was I finding any answers. Thus, I became a spiritual seeker. A friend of mine, who at the time was attending a metaphysical church some 70 miles away, asked me if I would like to get a reading. She thought maybe getting a reading would shed some light on the problems I was experiencing. So, of course, I jumped on the chance. Now, the pastor of that church was Reed Brown, and he is also an excellent medium. His way of doing a reading was to have you write 5 questions on a 3x5 card. You'd fold it up, hold it in your hand, and he'd place his hand over yours. And he never looked at the questions. And we sat opposite each other on the table. He said a small prayer, he put his hand over mine, and he began answering my questions, and I was astounded, to say the least. I was excited beyond measure that anyone had this ability. Plus, I got answers to my questions. And it was all about karma. At that particular time, my problems were about karma, having a karmic experience. And so it just had to play itself out. But I got an answer. Now, I want to bring up here a passage from the Gospel of Thomas, which is actually found in the Gnostic texts that are in the Nagamani library in Egypt.
Yes.
And Thomas writes, you know, let him who is seeking keep seeking, and when he finds, he will be troubled. And when he has been troubled, he will be astonished. And when he has been astonished, he will be at one with the all. Now, my reading that day with Reverend Brown astonished me, and from that moment on, although at that moment I wasn't, I don't think, one with the all, it put me on that path. I had to know everything, be everything, do everything, and if there was a mystical experience to be had, I wanted to have it. And I took it practically every class that the Arlington Metaphysical Chapel had to offer. I did it even though I had to drive an hour and 45 minutes each way to get there. I would have driven 3 hours. You know, I learned meditation and psychic development, spiritual development. I took ministerial classes, classes on the Kabbalah and shamanism and Buddhism and Hinduism. And, you know, it just was a fabulous journey. I spent time in an ashram in Encinitas, California. I traveled all over the place to take classes. Well, you get the point, right? And one day, an opportunity presented itself. A hypnotherapy practice was for sale in the town I lived in. I went, I saw, I bought. Now, what's important about this is, as is often the case with me, I tend to do things backwards. I bought the practice before I became a hypnotherapist.
Right. Great act of faith.
You know, it really was not...
Well, that's how it's done, isn't it, Jen?
Well, for me, it seems to be. I mean, it really was not something I even considered doing until the practice came to my attention, if you can believe that. Mm. You know, so I bought the practice, and then, and the man I bought it from taught me some very basic hypnosis inductions, and so I started out doing smoking cessation and weight loss.
Oh, great.
And from there, I went to Washington, D.C. I took the training. I got the certification as a clinical hypnotherapist. And basically what a clinical hypnotherapist is they don't do stage hypnosis. You know, they don't do it for entertainment. It's all about therapy. And so my practice grew by leaps and bounds. And I attribute this to two things. One, I believed in what I was doing. I still do. And because I believed in it and because I believed hypnosis was very powerful in bringing about healing, I was successful. The other thing I did was I gave a lot of lectures. I spoke to every Lions Club and Rotary Club and Kiwanis Club that I could find. And first thing you know, I was teaching at high schools and then colleges and then universities and then expanded my practice by bringing in another hypnotherapist, a grief counselor, a licensed clinical social worker, and a massage therapist. You know, at that time it was funny because other hypnotherapy practices would open in the city and they would close within the year. On the other hand, me, I was very successful. And I know I was successful because in my mind there was no reason not to be. I set into motion in the universe an energy flow of success, and that is how it works. You know, you intend something, you feel positive about it, you work towards that goal, feeling good while you're working towards the goal.
Right.
And, well, you get back what you give out. That's the law of attraction at work. I've seen it over and over again.
Well, let me ask you, because you know, part of your work in hypnosis is, in fact, in self-esteem and confidence and other aspects of quality of life like this. So what is it that hypnosis allows you to do, I mean, with regard to consciousness?
Well, as I've said before, you know, when... Actually, I don't think I did say this part before. I've talked a lot now. When you're hypnotized, you have the ability to tap in to a conscious intelligence. There is a doorway that opens when someone is in a meditative trance and in a hypnotic trance. And by the way, they're the same thing. If I were to hook you up to an EEG machine,
yeah,
and we would register you while you were in meditation and then put you into hypnosis, it would register exactly the same. There's no difference.
Hmm.
You're just utilizing the state differently. So where meditation is used to quiet the mind, hypnotists use that same state to access higher mind. And while you're in the hypnosis...
Your higher mind?
Call it higher mind, consciousness. There's so many terms for this. You're going to hear me interchange them constantly.
Okay.
It's just whatever comes into my head at the same time. But higher mind, sacred unity, the all, infinite intelligence.
Yeah.
I'm referring to the same energetic field. But while we're in that state, we have to set the logical thinking mind aside to get to that state. Our logical thinking mind is like a guard at the door. So we have to set that aside, and once it's set aside, we can enter a trance state and connect to this higher mind or pure mind, and which is also consciousness. And what's interesting is, truly, it's all about frequency. When someone is in hypnosis, their vibration gets very high, and all of their senses go into hyperdrive. Their hearing, their sense of smell and touch, for example, become hyper-acute. One thing we have to do for people while we're hypnotizing them is suggest that sounds and noises won't bother them at all. Otherwise, a phone ringing will have a strong startle effect, and it's unpleasant to the person. So now we've tapped into universal consciousness. We're in that space. It's kind of like a huge computer bank. And everything that ever was and all future potential and possibilities are stored there in that energetic field. And this is why we can often get answers to questions that previously eluded us when questions were asked. When in hypnosis, you can get the answer because you're tapped into that big field of energy where everything is. Also, it's important to note that you can guide and direct this energy to influence the physical body in positive ways. And one example, and we've seen it and we've heard about it, is prayer circles. A group of people go into prayer or meditation while holding the same intention. They bring change, often instantly, to a situation.
Yeah, and it's partly because they're becoming part of the larger circle, and it's not personal anymore.
Right.
So that obstacle is passed. I think if things are repressed, it's because of a judgment factor or a fear factor, something that's a block in there.
Right, and you know, this type of thing is what people call miracles. And, you know, to us they seem like miracles, but they aren't really. Once everyone catches on that we're all part of universal consciousness, then we can all do these things all the time. I mean, Jesus said, when he said, these things you do, I do, you will do, and even greater things will you do, he was speaking about a time in the future when we would all stop identifying with our physical world, our very limited selves, and wake up to the fact that we're so much more than that. We are universal. We're all energy. And universal mind is intelligent, and we can direct that energy any way we see fit.
Thank you so much for that answer. We're about halfway through the program now, and we're just going to take a short break. Stay on the line, Janet. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we will continue our conversation on hypnosis and spirituality with Reverend Janet Decker. Let's spend a couple of minutes now with Marvin Gaye. Stay with us.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer.
talk to me, so you can see.
And welcome back to the Godspeed Institute. I am your host, Carol Hallenbeck. We're speaking with Reverend Janet Decker, clinical hypnotherapist and a dean of the International Metaphysical University. Now, Reverend Decker, in this part of the program, can we delve deeper now into the spirituality of your work with regard to hypnosis?
Yes, absolutely. I like to define spirituality as being in touch with or feeling sacredness in all things. And it's about living from the heart. When I'm about to do something, I always bring it into my heart area, and I feel whether or not it's good for me to do this thing at this time. When someone's living from a spiritual place, they know there's more to life than what the six senses can detect. Mm. You know, a spiritual person feels their connection to their natural world, and they feel its rhythm. For instance, I say I'm a spiritual gardener. I grow most of my own food. And when I go out to plant my garden in the spring, I get a sense of what to plant, where, and when to plant it. As it's growing, I have a sense of what it needs in the form of nutrients. Now, this is not knowledge necessarily from books. It's
right.
Something that I feel. You know, and I always acknowledge the earth, and I honor her and all her kingdoms, and I respect the earth, and I feel gratitude. You know, I do not feel myself as separate from her either, and this is why I think what I plant grows.
Mm.
You know, and
yeah.
My approach to work from a spiritual perspective, first and foremost, I see each of my clients as a spiritual being, having a human experience, not the other way around. You know, this is an old saying, but for me it's truth. When someone comes to me, regardless of the reason, I first make them comfortable being with me. For most people, coming to see a hypnotherapist is a real stretch to begin with.
Really?
So I want them to know that I'm not weird in any way. And they, you know, and they don't want anyone to know they're here, and I respect that. You know, every person's journey is a journey into health and wholeness. It's very personal. So when I guide people into hypnosis and they are connected to source energy, to the all, this is a deeply spiritual place for them and for me. Now, I don't take it for granted. In fact, I'm in awe of it, and I'm humbled by it, really. And at that moment when my client and I are connected, not just to each other, but to infinite intelligence, to the source of all, you know, that's no small thing.
Hmm. Yes, it takes, I imagine, a great amount of trust. And as you said earlier, You were looking to become a psychologist and didn't find that sort of talking cure experience to work for you. Perhaps others then from the other end of it found the same thing. Do you feel that they perhaps come to hypnosis almost as a kind of last resort rather than, you know, an initial welcoming thought?
Yes. Most all of my clients, I'm the last stop. They've done
the
everything
bus stops
else
with you, Jeff.
Yeah, it's very rare actually that people come to me first. Although I do have them. I had a client yesterday. I was his first choice, which is always amazing to me when that happens because it doesn't happen that often.
Mm. Yes. Well, and what you were discussing before about your garden, you seem to have, as you said, it's not book knowledge. It seems very intuitive, and. The same thing, I imagine, must take place between you and a client within hypnotherapy. But I imagine, yes, that trust is a big issue. And feeling safe, you know, to become that larger self almost as an observer and let things come through.
Trust is a big part of it. And I spend a lot of time
with my client initially, with all my clients, to try to explain to them what we're really doing and what happens, what they can expect to feel and experience when they're in that hypnotic state. Because most, 99.9% of people have never experienced it. They don't know. And so, you know, there is a trust, and I think the talking part of my sessions with my clients is what establishes a trust. They get to know me and see I'm not really weird or anything like that.
Now, when you say what you're doing and, you know, what the work is and what can they expect, how does it work on a healing level, let's say, if that is the issue at hand? If there's something that someone is seeking hypnosis around healing something?
Well,
because you mentioned invisible energy before. How does this all play together?
Well, when we tap into that source energy, all potentials lie there. And for me, to be good at my work, I have to, I have to connect with my client in their space. I tune into them. I get a sense of them. I feel them. I go into a semi-trance myself. Mm-hmm. I think every good hypnotherapist does this, or they're not. I don't know if they're any good or not. Mm-hmm. I go into a semi-trance space, and when I'm there, I feel their energy. I can move into that energy. I can become a part of it. Then together, I kind of use this analogy, together we link into source energy, to that higher consciousness. And when I'm there, of course, I know why the person has come to see me, all right, because that's all very clearly defined at the beginning of our session. So I'm talking and I'm connected, and then basically I channel what's given to me. I am told what I need to say to my client that will make it things change for them, improve them in whatever way they're there for. It's all very esoteric, really, because it's not something that you can see under a microscope. I just seem to know how to put my suggestions, how to do the phrases and the wording in my suggestion to their subconscious that will affect the change they're looking for.
Well, that's a great skill, and it might be esoteric, but it's clearly a practice, and it's fascinating to hear about joining someone in an energetic field and making a nudge that helps them along their way. Do you have any stories or particular exchanges you've had with someone around healing that you could share?
Well, I have a couple. You know, it's kind of funny. One of the funniest stories I have, it's not really...
funny story. Great.
Well, there are funny stories, too.
Yeah.
I had a young man come to see me once, and he said to me, "You don't look like a hypnotist." And I said, to which I replied, "Well, what do you mean?" Well, he said, "You look normal. You look ordinary." And I said, "Gee, thanks, I guess." And people still tend to hold to that old stereotype of what a hypnotist looks like. You know, flowing robes, a turban, waving hands in front of the eyes.
Yeah, swinging a little pendulum back and forth.
Yeah, that looked deeply into my eyes, Bela Lugosi kind of hypnotist thing.
Well, that's more like of a magic or... you know, mythical version. I think you've lectured about that as well.
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Yes, I have. But, you know, that's kind of a funny story. But I have two very nice stories. I had a young man. He was 12 years of age, and he had a disorder called Hirschsprung's disorder. And What that literally is there's no endings in the lower colon. So he could never feel when he needed to have a bowel movement.
Wow.
Now, I say this is profound because now he's 12 years old and he's in school.
Yeah.
And he just never knew. And so his mother called me. They had done the whole psychological thing. They'd done several surgeries that they do for this disorder. They take off part of the colon, pull it down, and hope there's nerve endings in the next section.
Right.
And, well, that just didn't happen for him. And he was becoming very distraught, and he didn't want to go to school, and he was depressed. And, you know, he wanted to be in sports, and he couldn't be. So I'm thinking to myself, what can I do for this boy? He had been to the psychologist to help him with his self-esteem. And I thought, well, I can do that, but there had to be more. So I thought, and this is where tapping into universal consciousness will give you the answer. As I'm contemplating, pondering what else I can do for this young man, I very clearly hear, give him a biological clock. Now, we all have biological clocks, but I wanted to instill one in him that so that at the same time every single day, he could experience, you know, go to the bathroom, and he would know he was safe. He didn't have to worry about it, and that was great, and that worked just fine. We were really thrilled with that. Now, it had a flaw. Sometimes we go to the bathroom more than once a day.
Right.
So, I went into this place that I go to, and I ask, okay, what else can I do? Well, said, well, teach him to control it with his own mind. He can cause his intestinal tract to move anytime he wants to.
Huh.
And so that's what I did. I taught him through hypnosis. We did guided visualization, guided imagery. And I said, anytime you go into the bathroom, you can make your intestinal tract move. And if it's empty, no problem. You know, if it isn't, it will empty.
Wow, that's an enormous change for his life.
Well, it changed his whole life. I mean, he got active in sports after that. I saw him one more time. I saw him about 3 or 4 times to do this because, you know, it's a process. We try one thing and then, you know, it would evolve from there. And if that wasn't the whole answer, then I had to do something else. So
right.
I didn't see him again for 4 years. And in 4 years, he came back to see me of his own accord. He was having no problems at all, none, not one, had never had an accident after that.
Hmm.
But he wanted to be sure because he was going to go to college.
Hmm.
And he just wanted to make sure that he was still doing everything right and it was going to work for him. And, hey, it's good to cover your bases.
Right, as it were.
Yeah.
Yes. So did you sort of renew or adjust the suggestion?
Oh, yeah. I just simply reinforced them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I made sure that he knew in his own mind that he was safe, that he was doing it right, and that everything he was doing was fine, and that it would keep on working no matter where he was, no matter what he was doing, you know, no matter how old he got. Mm-hmm. He would always be able to do this. And he's been fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and another thing, another healing that happened, which was truly a miracle in a sense, if you want to call it a miracle, because we weren't even addressing a particular problem. I do a lot of talks to groups, and frequently when I do groups, I'll do a group hypnosis session, just something very short, you know, 5 to 10 minutes at the most, and I guide people into a, you know, a relaxation sort of thing, and I don't give any particular suggestions except feeling calm and feeling peaceful and, you know, just feeling good. And in 2 very separate instances, in one of these group sessions, and each session had, one session had about 15 people in it, another one had about 25 in it. There were 2 women, one in each session, and these were about 2 or 3 years apart. And they were both crying when I brought them out of hypnosis, and so I ask, is everything okay? What is wrong? You know, all, with somebody crying, you automatically think something's wrong. Well, the reality is something was very, very right. both of these women had not been able to cry or have tears for years. They had been to doctors. One had had surgery on her tear ducts. They just used tears. They used the artificial tears in her eyes.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And they were both, from that moment forward, their tear ducts were. Now, this wasn't addressed. You know, remember, I'm doing a group. It's very generic.
Right.
But it was just being in that relaxed state. Something shifted for them in their energy, in their consciousness. And this problem went away. Just like that.
But would you say that was just a completely physical problem, or was there something else there?
How do we know? I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, you know, regular medical science hadn't taken care of it.
Right, exactly. I was just going to say they went to doctors for the problem, and they couldn't fix them. Was it energetic in nature?
Hmm.
There's a good chance it was. But I don't know that for sure.
Right, but it shifted.
Yep, it shifted.
Now,
you know, so that's kind of a fascinating thing.
Yes, it is. It is. Now, in terms of psychic and intuitive development, do you think that everyone possesses these kind of abilities or potential and are basically lying dormant?
Yes, I think we're all born. I know we're all born with some sort of psychic gift. It's a birthright, really. But because it's not encouraged, it atrophies, you know. But it never totally disappears. You know, I see being psychic, whether that's being clairvoyant, which is clear seeing, clairaudient, which is clear hearing, or clairsentient, which is clear sensing. Mm-hmm. All these are simply being connected to the all. Mediumship is another thing, and that comes in here. A person who's a medium can connect to people who have crossed into spirit, you know, people who are no longer incarnate. And many mediums also connect to angels and ascended masters. And again, we all have the capability. We just need to encourage it to awaken.
Mm.
It's a gift. We all have it.
Mm. And how then would one practice or develop these faculties?
I'm actually teaching a whole course on that at IMU.
Oh, really? That's one way.
Which is developing or cultivating psychic gifts. It's a process. The course is 12 weeks long. It's very comprehensive. But regardless of where you are right now with your psychic development, you can enhance and grow it. The way I do it for myself and others is to suggest to myself while in hypnosis that my psychic abilities are now fully operational and that I have full power over them. And yes, there's a little more to it than this, you know, because we need to feel it and practice it in order to really be good at it. And we have to learn to trust what we're getting psychically. And probably that's the hardest part of all, is trusting in what's coming through to us. You know, I like to say that people who are psychic are not really special because they're psychic. They're only special if they use it. And, you know, this is true, considering that being psychic is a faculty we're all born with. You know, very few people on the planet really use their psychic gifts, but it's, you know, it doesn't mean they can't use them. They just don't know how to use them.
Hmm. Yes. And also I wanted to ask you, as you are a minister, how has your work in hypnosis meshed or helped to inform your work as a minister in a church?
Well, I approach my work from a very spiritual perspective. First and foremost, you know, I see my clients, I think I said this, as spiritual beings.
Yeah.
You know, not the other way around. And when I guide people into hypnosis, and they're connected to that source energy, to the all, you know, it's a deeply spiritual place for them and for me. You know, I just don't take it for granted. And I'm actually awed and I'm humbled by it at the same time.
Hmm.
So, you know, and during that time, you know, I see that work as being very spiritual, regardless of whether they're there to, you know, overcome a smoking habit or whether they're there to get over a test anxiety or to overcome a fear or a phobia.
Or something repressed.
Or something repressed. Yeah. You know, there's so many, you know, hypnosis, it can be used for virtually anything. You know, from improving your golf game, you know, to healing cancer. There's no limit to the is. Don't limit the is. That's what...
That's an illusion.
Yes, an illusion.
By Richard Bach.
Don't limit the is.
That's right.
And it's so true.
Gosh, that's... You must be psychic, because that's my favorite book.
My favorite book.
That's funny.
I always called it my spiritual Bible. My first Bible, well, my second Bible. My first Bible was the Christian Bible.
Right.
But my metaphysical Bible is illusions.
Yes. Well, but you know, I just got chills. That's lovely. Yeah, for folks out there, you would really enjoy this book written by Richard Bach. It's called Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah. And we're heading towards the end of the program. Janet, I wanted to ask you, other than illusions, are there any books or projects that you would like to share? Or perhaps give some directions on websites where people can learn more about your work or connect with the school?
Well, they can, I'm actually, let's see, let me get my thoughts together here. I'm teaching, or actually I'm proxy teaching another class at IMU, and in addition to the Aramaic prayer and psychic development, I am overseeing and proxying Understanding Our Paranormal Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fun class. In that course, we talk about all the things people find interesting, such as ghosts or hauntings, aliens, Bigfoot, you know.
Sure.
We offer some insight.
Mysteries.
Yeah, and evidence of, you know, sorts for that. And some things will always be speculative. But it's a fun class and well worth taking. They can go to the International Metaphysical University. That's actually intermetu.com. I-N-T as in Tom, E-R, M as in Mary, E-T, U.com.
Terrific. Well, I wanted to thank you, Reverend Janet Decker, for being on the program today. We hope to stay in touch, and perhaps we'll be able to speak with you again in the future.
Okay. Well, thank you, Carol. I love being on the show, and I appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
Thank you very much, and best of luck.
Blessings to you.
Now, before we close the show today, listeners, I just wanted to share a reflection with you. We touched a bit on it today in our conversation with Janet, and it's on fear. Now, personally, I did not know fear. When I was a child and teen, this world was my natural home, the universe, my stomping ground, and I dreamed without limits, and my dreams caught fire. As a young adult, I thought I could do anything, and I usually did. I was something nearly or seemingly indestructible. No fear, perhaps a touch of stupidity, but no fear. I began to know fear much later, when I fell in love and got close to the person I would share my life with. That is, when I had something to lose, a life built together, a home, our dreams, and the little ones who would come to join us. And suddenly, the fluid, whimsical nature of the universe that I loved for so long became, in my mind, precarious, random, and for some time I feared the random. It's just so easy to emerge from the web of life and be absorbed back into it through circumstances beyond our control. But love is strength. After some years, I learned to live in love and to trust with the faith of a grown-up that life is merciful, that we are eternally safe, and that no matter what scars might befall our hearts, all would be well. Nothing is lost in this universe. So live. When you experience fear, feel it, respect it, and then try to move beyond to do what you can, when you can, to keep those dreams burning. Follow your dreams, trust in God and the universe, trust yourself, make a journey for your soul, and don't wait for every detail to be nailed down. Meet your miracles halfway. That's your tip of the week for your spiritual tool belt that you wrap around yourself every day. Thank you for joining us for the Godspeed Institute today. This program was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City, engineered by Myron Bitts and produced by Michael Hallenbeck. If you would like to hear this or any of our previous programs again or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. Please send your comments to office@GodspeedInstitute.com. We always enjoy hearing from you. And join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems right here every Sunday at 2 p.m. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.